CBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Andy Field. Farmington, New Mexico police identifying the gunman in yesterday's neighborhood mass shooting as 18-year-old Bo Wilson. He was a local high school student. Deputy Chief Kyle Dowdy says it appears the suspect fired at random and killed three older women, injuring several others.
Almost a quarter of a mile crime scene, so pretty large and vast, and he was just shooting indiscriminately. Houses, cars, people as he went.
Police shot and killed the suspect. 12-year-old boy and a 20-year-old man in custody in Texas on murder charges for the fatal shooting of a Sonic drive-in employee. A meeting between President Biden and congressional leaders at the White House did not yield any deal on the debt ceiling, but House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says they're still talking.
Now, I wish we had been able to be in this place 100 days ago. This is what we requested, but we are where we are. So we will work hard to make sure to try to have this to come to fruition.
President Biden cutting an overseas trip short for the talks. This is ABC News. They've sentenced an Alabama man to nearly 2 years in prison for storming the Capitol on January 6th and invading the Senate floor with a knife on his hip. Joshua Matthew Black will get credit for his time already served. A controversy at the Cannes Film Festival.
Johnny Depp's new film, Jean du Barry, kicking off the opening of the Cannes Film Festival Tuesday night. And there's an organized online campaign against Depp, the film, and the festival by those who believe Depp's ex-wife Amber Heard's accusations that Depp physically abused her. They're using the hashtag CanYouNot to speak out. The president of the festival, Thierry Frémaux, answering questions Monday about Depp and separate accusations that Cannes celebrates sex abusers.
Pour un festival de violeurs.
Frémaux rejecting the criticism, saying people wouldn't attend if that's the case. Jason Athenson, ABC News. Hollywood.
The IRS is ready to launch a pilot direct filing system next year that's free for all. IRS has been researching direct file with funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin is in a war for talent with other states. That's according to University of Wisconsin Assistant President Jay Roffitt. He says if people leave Wisconsin for better jobs in engineering and technology, that hurts prospects for careers like teaching and healthcare here.
If we don't solve those issues in this state and make the investments that are necessary, I worry about what Wisconsin looks like in 5 and 10 and 15 years.
Roffman tells Wisconsin IE decreasing enrollment makes funding expensive programs a bigger challenge. A committee of the state Senate meets today to talk about banning local governments from banning gas-powered power plants. Lawmakers have already passed statewide bans on local bans on gas-powered cars and stoves. In sports, the Cardinals clobbered the Brewers last night 18-1. That ties a franchise record. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats. And there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
We're here!
Whoa! That was fast!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. President tweeted out today, to have the best economy in the world, you've got to have the best infrastructure in the world. That's why we're making historic investments to get America moving again while creating good jobs and using American materials. And folks, it's about damn time. And music to this person's ears. This is something that I've been talking about for all of the 18 years I've been doing this. We need to create jobs here at home, building the things that we need. We need to be investing heavily in infrastructure, creating those jobs that we need that have a pathway into the middle class. Understand, Biden is the first president in my lifetime. Think about this for a second. I'm 56. He is the first president in my lifetime that's saying a college education shouldn't be the only pathway into the middle class, that work has value, that your labor has value, and you should be able to make a good living working. That is an about face. Over 40 years of political messaging is, well, no, we don't need those dirty manufacturing jobs. We're all going to get PhDs and we're all going to get corner offices. And look, I've been saying for a long time, we need this kind of about face because we got a lot of stuff that needs to be rebuilt. But we're now in an economy where no longer will one income suffice. No longer, I don't think two incomes suffice. I think we're in the three income territory just to survive. Everybody I know has got a side hustle because the reality is corporations have crushed wages and crushed benefits. And they've thrown us all these gimmicks and all these, this is your lifeline. You can be a millionaire. And I was looking at this graph put out by an economist over at the group called American Compass. They are a conservative economic think tank. Very different from the free market think tank that we had on last night. But they're a conservative economic, their idea is conservative economics. And they put out this infograph saying, look, something's wrong. Over the last 40 years of economic growth, where has it gone? And they point out that corporate profits per capita have gone up 188%. GDP per capita has gone up 91%. Labor productivity, the work that you and me and everyone else does, up 107%. So when you know this, you know corporate profits are up 188%, productivity is up 107%. In order for corporations to have that massive share of the economic pie, what do you think the average wage went up over the 40 years? And this is a conservative economic think tank saying just 25%. So now remember, you know, from the end of World War II up until about the middle 70s, you had very strong union density. You had people attached to jobs. The idea of a 40 years and a gold watch and a retirement pension, that kind of stuff, was a reality. 40 years of supply side voodoo Reaganomics and all of the economic gimmickry that's been shoved down our throat has taken that productivity from working people and handed it to the very wealthy and the corporate profiteers. That's the reality. And today was supposed to have a conversation with someone about AB5 out of California and the idea of independent contractors and misclassification and all of this stuff, but turned out to be one of the most difficult attempts to book a guest that I've ever had in 18 years of doing this. I have booked 3 guests a day, 5 days a week for 18 years, and never have I had the difficult time that I had today. And I just gave up. I said, you either do it or you don't. Because look, I think we have to talk about employment law in this country. I think we have to find some consensus to move us in a direction so that we are no longer pitted against each other, that regardless of where you are in the economy and you're a worker, we're moving towards gaining power. We're moving towards getting our productivity compensated. The fact that a conservative economic think tank is saying, yeah, labor productivity went up over 107% over the 40 years period span, and your wages only went up 25%. Corporate profits, again, 188%. Somebody's doing really well. And like I said yesterday, when Warren Buffett said, look, who's doing well in this economy? I am. Guys like me. The Forbes 400, who have seen their wealth, you know, not just double, quadruple, 25 times. I don't even know the word for 25 times it growing. Did your income grow and your wealth grow? No, of course not. And we're sent these binary, you got to be for or against something. And when someone's against something, I want to know what they're for. I want to know if there's room to move. I've always been someone who's said, I'll talk to anybody about anything because I want to learn things. I want to hear different perspectives. And it just, the Twitter sphere just did what Twitter does. All of the trolls came out with, I'm looking to score points. And I just walked away from it. Done. Because here's the thing. Look, I'm a small business owner. This radio show, small business. Everything you see put on every night, I did it. I'm the guy. We distribute it to stations who freely carry it, put it on their airwaves. We podcast. We do speaking engagements. We do all kinds of things to raise revenue. We don't work for anyone other than ourselves. And this is where this idea of this AB5 comes from. And I'm a big fan of the ABC test. I'm a big fan of ensuring that we don't take jobs that are currently done by workers and put them in a situation where, hey, you're your own boss, because I lived that. I watched the trucking industry go from a heavily unionized, good-paying, solidly middle-class, family-sustaining wage career to being, well, sweatshops on wheels, where people are literally, virtually slitting each other's throats for pennies. And again, none of this is new. You know, I go back, we're just reliving 100 years ago. You know, the Teamsters, I've been a Teamster for over 30 years. The original origins of the Teamsters were horse people who had their team of horses who would pull people's wagons. They were independent contractors. They were their own boss. They organized for better wages, hours, conditions. They came together as working people, not business owners, but as working people going, hey, we want better wages, hours, conditions. We want security. And what's happened is, this is another one of these gimmicks that have been thrown back at us to divide and conquer, to keep us pitted against each other. Because look, freelancers, under the law, can't organized. They can't union. Who are they negotiating with? We should be. We should have a freelancers union of people who are doing freelance kind of work. Like, you know, my electrician that came and did some work at the house. He's his own boss. And the ABC test for me is a simple enough test. It basically says that you, the owner, if you will, you own the business. You perform the work as a course of your business that the person you're working for doesn't do, and that you control independence over your working conditions. Now, I throw this out as one of the reasons AB5 really caught attention was because of FedEx. Everybody knows FedEx. The FedEx driver comes to my house. He wears the purple outfit. He drives the purple truck. He's plastered with the FedEx. It's a FedEx driver. He doesn't actually work for FedEx. He's his own boss. He's an independent contractor. He works for a third-party logistics company. There's the Amazon driver who comes to your house. Doesn't actually work for Amazon. And this is where I go, you know, there are conversations to be had on what kind of employment law we want to have, but this blind, we do nothing, is insane to me. So I was hoping to have this conversation about, you know, okay, are there acceptable, are there reasonable ways to go, look, we want to ensure that people who work in warehouses aren't considered independent contractors, are going to have to show up with their own forklift. Are we, or the grocery store, the clerk who's bagging, sorry, it doesn't work for the grocery store. He's an independent contractor working for your tips. I mean, is that where we want to go back to? And here's my problem. Because look, there are reasons to be for AB5 and there's reasons to be against them. The reason to be for it is, you know, clearly being an employee comes with greater amounts of security and stability, comes with, you know, minimum wage laws, comes with maximum hour laws, comes with workers' compensation laws, unemployment, all this stuff. And in fact, I remember when I was 18, my first experience as a subcontractor, what we called back then, an independent contractor, my own boss, was swinging a hammer. I was working building houses over a summer. And a guy shot me in the foot with a nail gun. Hurt like, shoe bloody, terrible. And the foreman's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. I go, well, I'm going to the doctor. He goes, well, it's on you. Because they had no responsibility for any accidents that occurred. Because, hey, you're your own boss. Congratulations. So having that security is something that you would want. Now, the reason to be against it is, look, I want to do what I want when I want because I'm of sufficient capability to lead my way. And that's great. But that's not every working person. And the trucking industry is a perfect example of that. And I've got hundreds of stories of independent contractors, their own boss kind of stories that I've come across over the years. But I'll never forget the guy who on Christmas Eve was standing in his underwear on his shoes in the truck stop bathroom, bathing in the sink because he didn't have the $5 to take a shower because the company didn't pay him and didn't give him enough fuel to drive home. Now, he's his own boss. He's an independent contractor, yet they didn't pay him. They wanted to keep him in that spot till after the holidays, and they did. Or the guy that I met from MS Carriers one night, who told me that in 7 years, that truck was going to be his. All he had to do was work for half of the going rate to be able to pay the lease and the insurance and the fuel and the tolls and all of the upkeep and all the maintenance and all the breakdowns and all that. The truck was going to be his in 7 years. And I kind of broke his heart by telling him in 7 years, the truck's going to have 1,000,000 miles on it. And you're going to be responsible to cover the costs of doing rebuilds. It's huge. Are you saving for that? Because understand, these independent contractor schemes, if they were good for you, corporate America wouldn't be doing it. It's good for them to shift costs and to shift responsibilities and to do what they've been doing. But here's the thing. And again, we can fight over this and we can be against each other and we can eat each other and we can, you know, call each other names and we can be horrible to each other. We can do that and we do it well. We're very good at it.
But the reality is as robotics took away a lot of manufacturing jobs, AI is coming for the rest of them. They're coming for, you know, doctors and lawyers and computer programmers and accountants. In fact, I just saw a story today that pointed out that ChatGPT evidently took the radiology exam and got a 69 out of 70. And I guess this was a little while ago. The upgraded version, this GPT-4, it scored an 81% on this radiology exam. And it got me thinking, at what point do we as humans do nothing? Now, I know writers. I know a lot of writers who, I use the AI to, you know, for a little creativity, and then I make it my own. Understand my freelance writer friends? In my lifetime, you will be obsolete. So as we're fighting each other over the crumbs left in this Hunger Games known as our worker economy, we're not building the kind of power that we should be, and the kind of power that's going to bring us together and demand a portion of the profits that our labor does create. Because when a conservative think tank says, hey, something's wrong, corporations are taking 188% of the pie, while labor productivity is over 107% up, but wages are only up 25%. When they're saying something's wrong, when they're sounding the alarm, the people who brought us the bad ideas that got us here, you know things are not great. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Marianne, listening on KTRC in Santa Fe, New Mexico, writes, Rick, love that finally someone is talking about the dangers of AI and not the rose-colored glasses stuff we've been lulled into believing. I want to get your thoughts on this statement by Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, and what she quotes here is, the U.S. should require companies to be licensed by the government if they want to develop powerful artificial intelligence systems. This is, and she says, have you ever heard of such a thing? This should be frightening. This is the AI guy going, this is dangerous. Maybe we shouldn't have this kind of unregulated power. Maybe you should, hey, legislature, hey, Congress, hey, anybody. Maybe this isn't great for us. Maybe we don't. And I agree, maybe we don't. Think about the millions of people who are going to lose their jobs. Think about education. Just take education for a moment. when there's no longer a teacher sitting in front of the classroom and you have an AI bot who's been programmed by whomever, consider, you know, the theocrats that are running for school boards right now having access to everything. Or if you're on the other side, you know, the craziest way out far lefty who's, you know, going to fill your mind with socialism. Imagine that kind of power. Now, there's going to be no checks on that. And there's going to be no jobs in that. And understand, education is important. You know, I've talked to friends who are professors who, you know, say, look, you know, this is in the classroom already. Talking to my daughter who said that, you know, she believes her teacher would know. But get into a university setting with 300 students in a classroom. AI, you know, and in fact, my producer who said we should do a PhD program with a non-existent person and just use all AI. Because that can happen. We should be really concerned. Because once when they finish off public education, which is the goal, because if you don't have critical thinkers, if you don't have people who can think outside the box creatively, which, you know, the reality is AI may be doing that. More than just the functionality of putting food on the table, it's leading a decent life. It's looking at things and being it to analyze information that's being thrown at us, to be able to pick and choose, to filter. If everything that we're doing is now going to be, done by a computer, what does 20 years hold for us? Which is why, Marianne, I got to tell you, I've been freaked out by it. And I hope somebody will in Congress wake up. And as I said yesterday, I want to see a technology adjustment tax, that if people lose their jobs because of AI, and this is where my freelance friends, you know, the little brigade of insaniacs who went on the Twitters today, this is where you could actually make some good and start saying, hey, maybe I can save my job. Maybe I can save industries. Maybe I can do something. Just kind of a thought. But we should be concerned. And when the CEO of a company is saying, hey, regulate us, that's pretty historic, don't you think? Don't you think it's pretty remarkable when a CEO goes, yeah, we've got this thing. This thing is pretty big. This thing's pretty important. You should probably do something. You should probably help us. Just, you know, kind of a thought. I don't know. Just kind of a thought. Let's go to the phones. Got Eric from Minnesota on line one. Eric, how are you today?
Doing good, Brother Rick. How are you?
I am living the dream. What's on your mind, brother?
No, that's fantastic. Just wanted to add to the conversation about, you know, the whole AI and self-driving, you know, thing and whatnot. And honestly, you're absolutely right. We need to start organizing and then waking the hell up, because it's a sell job, and what they're doing is they're using this as a tool to try to break everything that we know and have fought for over the years and everything we hold dear. It's, you know, to me, you know, I was originally from California. We heard this stuff, God, since like the 90s. You know, same thing with like self-driving cars and trucks. You never hear them talk about bounded versus unbounded. But that's not the point. The point is there are material reasons to be worried about this, because you're exactly right. They're trying to bust unions. They're trying to say people are irrelevant. And that is BS, with a capital B and a capital S. And we need to start saying, you know what? If you're going to say this and you're going to start, you know, because you know what? I'll tell you what. We buy it, but now we want this. And we need to start pulling ourselves together, pulling together the war chest, the old, you know, strike fund, because the irony now is that they can't stand to lose money for like a quarter. But if we can hold out for like, you know, at least a quarter, half a year, that would just about break them. But just that's the mentality we have to have. Yeah. And I think we're right, you know, kind of on the edge. Just redirect people's anger.
Or politically, we have to get our heads out of other people's business. I don't care what, if you wear a dress or what bathroom you go to. We better figure out how we're going to protect our livelihoods.
Oh, it's exactly right, because nobody going to the bathroom or what bathroom they use, because I'd like to think we live in America, and I've told a number of people, and it's actually interesting responses. I tell them, I mean, with some choice expletives, of course, you know, hey, look, you take that, you know, commie blankety blank back to wherever the blankety blank you came from, because here in America, you can basically, you know, if you want to call yourself X and Y, you can call yourself X and Y. I'd like to think that's why we live in the United States.
Yes, sir.
But you know what? If that's not what you think, you get, you know, just I'll show you the door. But it again, you're not totally trying to change their mind right away. You want to plant the seed. And that's exactly right. My paycheck doesn't depend on somebody wearing or not wearing a dress.
There you go. Appreciate the call, Eric. Thanks so much. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day Minneapolis Teamsters walked off the job. It was an historic strike that coincided with the pivotal Toledo Autolite and West Coast Waterfront strikes. Local Teamsters, many of whom later founded the Socialist Workers' Party, had been riding a wave of success, having organized the coal yards in February. Especially important was the development of the Cruising Picket Squad. It became a standard in later CIO battles. That spring, union leaders were determined to organize all the truck drivers and warehouse workers in Minneapolis. By May, Local 574 had over 5,000 members. The trucking bosses refused to deal with the union, and so they walked. The flying pickets toured the city and shut down all trucking. Strikers enlisted the support of the unemployed councils. They also provided the structure for a women's auxiliary that produced important strike literature and bulletins, ran soup kitchens that fed thousands of strikers daily, fought scabs and police on the picket lines, and drove picket trucks. Historian Brian Palmer, author of Revolutionary Teamsters, The Minneapolis Trucker Strike of 1934, notes that strike leaders looked to the example of the Illinois Progressive Miners of America when it came to building the women's auxiliary. They too sought to make women an integral part of the strike, thus encroaching on the male world of waged work. Strike headquarters were established, and as Palmer describes, was a beehive of activity on the eve of the strike as union carpenters and plumbers installed stoves, sinks, and serving counters. Union electricians installed communication wiring. Donations of money, food, vehicles, and gas rolled in as the strike revved up. Local 574 was poised to make Minneapolis a union town.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Oftentimes, when you suspect you're being gouged by corporate price fixers, you are. Take the rat-a-tat-tat of today's price jumps at supermarkets and chain restaurants. They make you want to rush to the cash register before they raise prices again. No, no, cry the CEOs of food giants. It's not us. It's, quote, supply chain disruptions. Then corporate politicians and economists chime in with old platitudes about the invisible hand of supply and demand. And media know-nothings also pile on, blathering about ne'er-do-wells causing a labor shortage. But hogwash, your suspicions are right. It's plain old price-fixing by avaricious food monopolies. Top executives even brag about it when talking to their bankers and shareholders. McDonald's, for example, recently told investors that, quote, strategic menu price increases in the past 3 months had boosted profits by 63%. Big Mac CEO exulted, I'm really proud of how our system has executed pricing. Never mind that it's their customers being executed. Well, say free market proselytizers, just buy from a competitor. But in nearly all segments of today's food economy, a handful of giants control the market, with each one in on the fix. For example, Chipotle, a McDonald's rival, also jacked up prices in the same three-month period, manufacturing an 84% profit increase. Its CEO then gloated to Wall Streeters, I think we've demonstrated we do have pricing power. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, these same giants are also fattening their profits by ripping off their workers. The federal poverty level is now $25,000 a year, with fast food workers typically getting only $3,000 a year more than that bare minimum for a 40-hour week. But there's the gotcha. The profiteering executives hold each worker to about 26 hours a week, creating a sub-poverty labor force for this multi-billion dollar industry.
Welcome. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
We got an email during the break from Brian. And this is something I've said numerous times, and I'm glad Brian's listening. He said, AI can take over if it wants, kill industries if it's profitable, and I wouldn't care if we were guaranteed rights to food, shelter, etc. I'm not thrilled with that. It's this next part. The lack of a safety net in this country is the only reason this topic scares us. And every transition, and I talk about this all the time, you go back, you know, hundreds of years, every transition that we have technological gains, somebody benefits wildly and working people get screwed. And I've been saying we need something like a trade adjustment assistance for technology, but better. So if you lose your job because of AI or robotics, that there's going to be a pathway to keep your family afloat. We're not talking about any of that. And by the way, there's no trade adjustment assistance anymore either. That went by the wayside. Thank you, my GOP friends. But anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, let's start with the AI and where this is going. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you. And it's really an image of me. It's not AI generated, I promise.
But here's the weird thing. You know, I had a guest on not too long ago who told me I was going to be okay because I'm doing this kind of a program. You know, you got to be quick on your feet. You got to research. You got to be able to speak in sentences. Well, I'm going, I don't think so. I think AI could, and I know there's a lot of people out there going, yeah, I can't wait till AI takes his job.
Yeah. Well, I disagree with that. I think you're unique, Rick. But the truth is, and I think Senator Blumenthal demonstrated this at the hearing where, like, he had AI, you know, do his introductory remarks or whatever and a speech. And it was like, you know, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. But, the way you led into this was perfect in that, I mean, there's lots of considerations about this with respect to, you know, privacy and just so many things. But transitions and employment adjustment is something that, you know, particularly blue collar workers have experienced throughout the last century. And as a nation, we've generally done a terrible job of helping with these transitions. And so as the fan of the show who wrote you said, one of the reasons why I think we do have a fear of it is that we haven't handled these adjustments properly. But I mean, I would say the silver lining to all of this is that, you know, I remember, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago where all the economists, particularly the neoliberals and all the pundits were saying, well, factory work is going to completely disappear in America because robots and automation are going to take over all the jobs. And you probably remember this too. And there's never going to be another large scale factory that's, you know, that has more than 1,000 people that's built in this country. All sorts of crazy things like that. And so, you know, that's certainly not the case. And that's partly because, you know, AI, automation, robots change the nature of work, change the skill set that's needed for work. But the fundamental fact remains, it's like, who's going to make things where? Place matters a lot. So if more things are made in America, that helps to make up the difference. And if we're able to, you know, expand into new fields and capture more of that market, that's going to be important too. And you'll have factories that have bunches of robots in them, but they'll also have manufacturing workers either doing maintenance on the robots or control of the robots or checking the systems and quality control and other jobs that require slightly different skills, but that should be well paying and have good benefits too. Again, if we get this right, this can go terribly wrong.
But here's my problem. My problem is, you know, Marianne from Santa Fe sent me an email just before you came on, you know, pointing out that this CEO, Sam Altman is his name. He's the CEO of OpenAI. Yep. He is saying, hey, government, maybe, I don't know, here's a thought, maybe you should be regulating this. When was the last time you heard a CEO going, hey, regulate me, regulate this industry? When was the last time you, I don't think I've ever heard that.
Well, I think it's the lesson. And I guess, you know, I've heard Sam Altman on a lot of different, like, talks over the years talk about AI. And I think the pace, both the breadth, the scale, the pace of this has, I think, exceeded their wildest imaginations, right? And so, which isn't off the case in tech. Sometimes it's a little slower than you think. And so it's the exact opposite here. And, you know, we've also lived through the experience of the first wave of the internet and how that went with no regulation and what that's done to mental health and to, you know, lots of other things. And so coming into this with and our privacy, you know, among other things. And so I think that it's I don't want to say he's enlightened. I think it's enlightened self-interest, because right. If AI is going to be scaled, and I don't know that he necessarily is in this for the revenue. I do think that he genuinely thinks that this has a chance to help humanity, or it could be really devastating, obviously, without the right controls, that that it's important that lawmakers get on top of this and offer some guardrails for all of this before it gets too far down the road.
No, I mean, look, I'm not a Luddite. I don't say smash the machine. Yeah. But maybe, I don't know, start figuring out how we have an economy where workers can survive, which is why I'm glad that the president is talking about, hey, you know, we don't need to all go to college and learn basket weaving or whatever to be able to get a good job. The fact that the first president in my lifetime to say, you know what, maybe building stuff's a good thing. I think that's important.
Yeah. I totally agree. And you've hit on something really, really unique about this potential transition with AI, is that in all likelihood, from just an employment perspective and from a skills perspective, it's going to change service sector professions way more than it will change manufacturing construction, right? Because construction, you need the folks to do that, right? I mean, you need the boots on the ground, you need the experience, you need people engaged with that. And that's still true of the factory, even with a lot of automation. You need that human touch. And that's far different from like a chatbot giving you customer assistance, right? And so this is something that really is not very replaceable by AI. And so it is important. And the other thing, just mentioned this, is that, you know, most of these jobs in manufacturing and construction don't require a four-year college degree. And we have such, you know, this is one of the, and I have mixed feelings about this, because I do, you know, I have a bachelor's degree, I have a master's degree. I also strongly believe that not everybody, that you don't need one to achieve the American dream. And that's where I think politicians have led folks down the wrong path, and to accumulate debt and to get degrees that they're not using when they could be using their, you know, their common sense and contributing in a lot of other ways, and getting skills too, you know, at a training program or at a community college. And so this obsession with four-year college degrees has helped to pile on debt and has really skewed education, so that these big institutions get most of the education money and everybody else is left scrambling, even though fewer than 40% of Americans will have a four-year college degree. Most of the money is directed towards that. So that is fundamentally unfair. The jobs that are being created through infrastructure, through this other kind of industrial policy with respect to clean energy and even in semiconductors, a lot of that stuff does not require a four-year college degree. It does require some skills, does require some training, does require responsibility, but you don't have to go into debt or spend 4 years of your life in a classroom to contribute and to achieve that American dream, right?
No, I'm with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. If you want to take a look at the work that they do there, you know, every time we have a change in the White House, I've pretty much my entire working life, I've always had one goal for them, and that is to return reward to work. This idea that I grew up believing, if you work hard, you play by the rules, you should be able to get ahead. And yet, I don't know if you've heard of this group, American Compass. They're conservative economic think tank. And I've been talking about this infographic that they put out that shows that corporate profits over the last 40 years have gone up 188%. Productivity is up 107%. But wages, if you were to fancy a guess on how much wages have gone up over that 40-year period, what number would you come up with?
Given 188% of the profit goes to corporate America, 107% productivity gains. How much did the worker benefit?
Yeah, real wages have been declining for, I think, virtually all of that period, you know, with the exception. I mean, things have changed the last couple of years, but still, you're absolutely right. All of the gains have gone to the holders of the capital and not to labor.
Yeah, so they're saying 25% wages went up.
Yeah.
I'm even willing to fight that. If you're talking about average everyday jelly bucket carriers and the ham and eggers who go to work and punch a clock, I'm going to argue 25 is high.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and I think workers that have been in global competition, those industries, they've been hit the worst, right? Because of the labor arbitrage and the downward pressure on wages from companies that can ship jobs overseas. And they certainly haven't kept pace nearly the way that wages in some other industries have, right? That's true.
So for me, Biden is that first guy. He's the first guy to saying, look, work should be rewarded. You should be able to live on an income. He hasn't said this yet, but I wish he would. Because I fear we're in a moment, Scott, where the average family doesn't need two jobs anymore. They need three.
Yeah.
Everybody I know has got, you know, each spouse has a job, and they got a side hustle.
Yeah.
You know, people are struggling, and I finally see someone in the White House saying it shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah. Right. Well, he's not always saying that, but the policies reflect that. And I'll just touch on – I'm going to do this from a different angle, but I'm going to touch on this organizing win for the steelworkers at Bluebird in Georgia, which is obviously a monumental achievement given that it's a right-to-work state and all of that. But here's the interesting thing about it. You know, and you know this from looking at this. Over the decades, companies have used the threat of moving production abroad to stifle organizing campaigns, right? I mean, this is something that's happened regularly. Kate Bronfenbrenner from Cornell documented how this was happening in the aftermath of NAFTA. And so it's very real. But in this case, Bluebird couldn't. You know why? Because of Buy America requirements. If they want to qualify for the federal money for school buses, they have to make those school buses in America. And so they have literally nowhere to go. And that helped. I mean, there's many other aspects of this, but I think that's an underappreciated aspect of it, is that if you have that, you can use procurement policy as a lever to help reindustrialize the country if we do it the right way. And this is just a shining example, I think, of how that's tipping the scale back and making it equal again, rather than tipping it all to one side that either stifles organizing campaigns or results in factory closures and plants moving overseas.
Now, as I say all the time, sound investments, smart policy, that will get us much further down the road. And I know you guys are running a get out some information activity, some actions that I like over at AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out. Tell us about what you're doing, because it's right in that wheelhouse of buying domestically produced products.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're urging the Transportation Department, and we're in the final days of this. This closes out basically on Friday, for get the Department of Transportation to drop a waiver that's been in effect for about 20 or 30 years that excludes manufactured products from Buy America. It's only iron and steel for highway projects, but this their waiver excluded manufacturing products. We want them to get rid of the waiver so that manufacturing products are included, so that those manufactured products that are used in federally funded highway projects have to be made in America, just like the iron and steel. Again, that's going to promote reshoring and all the stuff we just talked about. And so at AmericanManufacturing.org, there's a chance to weigh in. And all the big contractors that make a bunch of money off the imports, they're opposed to this. So the voices of people, very, very important in the closing days before the comment period.
The reason I think this is so important, Scott, is, you know, as we've been talking about those jobs coming back, reshoring our manufacturing base and living up to that sign that I think is still in Trenton, New Jersey, that says, you know, Trenton makes, the world takes.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that goes, I'm I'd be happy to burn the ashes of neoliberalism. I'd be happy to burn down the WTO and all of these institutions that have created this environment to destroy working people, at least my view. Thoughts? I mean, we're in a moment where are we undoing that stuff?
Yeah, I think we totally are, because I think that finally, from different perspectives, I will say, but I think both political parties, and you pointed out American Compass, which is very right leaning, but also kind of populist, and these Biden industrial policies completely break from neoliberalism, completely break from because for exactly those reasons, stagnant wages, loss of corporate profits, reduced industrial capacity, reduced competitiveness. And restoring this through public policy is the way to do it. And, you know, Paul Krugman had a piece, in the New York Times. And you know, again, he's a Nobel laureate economist who was a classic free trade guy. And he basically said, yeah, we should decide some things are more important than like the World Trade Organization rules, like saving the planet, for instance, is more important. And so I think from a progressive value perspective, I think we can say that having well-paying jobs is more important than that, or having the ability to invest in our infrastructure or set our own procurement rules is more important than this philosophy. And so there's signs that we're getting it. Editorial pages sure don't yet. And there's plenty of economists who still don't. And there's the remnants of those wings in both parties. But it's getting smaller by the day. Yeah. Which is encouraging.
No, and I'm taking credit for that, because I've been talking about this stuff for now 18 years. Yeah. It's finally good to see people going, oh, light bulb time.
Yeah.
You know, light bulb. It's finally, you know, waking some people up, and that is a good thing. And I don't need the credit for it, just as long as we do the right thing. But Scott, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I hope folks will check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Sign on to the action and get your voice heard. Scott, appreciate the time.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks so much, our good friend Scott Paul. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1979. That was the day we lost one of the giants of the U.S. labor movement, A. Philip Randolph. A. Philip Randolph spent his life working for black workers and the cause of labor. He organized the first national black union to be recognized by the American Federation of Labor, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. The fight for union recognition took 12 years, and the porters signed their first contract in 1937. Randolph went on to lead the effort to desegregate war industries and armed services during and after World War II. He was one of the leading organizers of the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, one of the most memorable actions of the civil rights movement. He also worked tirelessly to break down discrimination within the labor movement. He was elected the first black vice president of the AFL-CIO in 1955. Randolph's dedication to the cause of labor was summed up when he said, quote, "The essence of trade unionism is social uplift. The labor movement has been the haven for the dispossessed, the despised, the neglected, the downtrodden, the poor." But Randolph also consistently declared that no movement for social justice can be complete unless it is also inclusive. While organizing for the desegregation of the war industries during World War II, Phillips argued, quote, equality is the heart and essence of democracy, freedom and justice, equality of opportunity in industry, in labor unions, schools and colleges, government, politics, and before the law. There must be no dual standard of justice, no dual rights, privileges, duties, or responsibilities of citizenship. No dual forms of freedom. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Got an email from Dan today, listening on KCAA in Loma Linda, California. Sent me an article on the dancers at Star Garden in North Hollywood. Evidently, they've unionized. They are the only unionized strippers in America, Dan says. The merch, he said, should be awesome on the picket line. It's a picket line that I think a lot of guys would join that picket line if there were one. But they're not the first unionized dancers ever. They're the only ones now. The Lusty Lady in San Francisco years ago was the first unionized strip club, I guess, dancer club. What do you want to call that? They closed back in 2013. I think just after we swung by on our People's Tour back in 13 when we did our Labor History Tour. We actually swung by the exterior, did not get to go in. We had small kids with us at the time. But if you remember, and this, you know, goes back to my AB5 discussion, you know, I started thinking about, you know, Dan's email and going, you know, the reality is there were major court battles over whether the dancers were employees or independent contractors. And there were major fights over this. And for years, these dancers couldn't unionize because they were all independent contractors. They all worked for themselves, shaking their moneymaker, I guess. And you go, who would have thought that if you go to one of these establishments, that it's going to be all little business owners and not workers who should be covered by, you know, minimum wage laws, who should be covered by, you know, our laws and you know, all the stuff that we expect as employees. I mean, it's really quite remarkable the things that have happened. But good on them. Good on the dancers at the Star Garden. I am I'm all in favor of it. Let's quick go to the phones before the break. We've got Lewis from New Jersey on one. How are we doing, Lewis?
I'm all right. How you doing, Rick?
I am doing well. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I want to talk to you a little bit about the last segment you had with the gentleman whose name escaped me.
Yeah, Scott Paul.
I agree with the overall premise of what you're talking about in regards to going to college or not going to college, because it's definitely not cut out for everybody, right? So I agree with that. But I also think, as you all were talking about it, and this is where I'm going to push back just a little bit, I kind of felt like your analysis was a little simplistic.
Okay,
right?
Hit me.
Because, yes, a lot of kids maybe didn't need to go to college and such, but, you know, the way that it came about, as we all know, it's definitely through neoliberalism, the restructuring.
I agree with you.
You know, the economy. But I also wanted to say that not every kid who goes to school goes and gets a degree that's worthless, right? And I think part of the problem is that everything is being instrumentalized or commodified in our society through neoliberalism, even academia.
I agree.
Which I used to be a part of, right? So, you know, I hear where y'all are coming from, and like I said, I totally agree with most of what you said. Just a little part there where I felt like, eh.
Yeah, I don't think we disagree at all. I think maybe I didn't make it clear where we are. I think people going to college, mm-hmm. most certainly for things that they need, absolutely should do. But I was told growing up, the only path to the middle class, and I don't know how old you are, I was told the only path was you got to get a college education, because those steel mill jobs, those are gone.
Yep.
Those manufacturing jobs, those are gone. Brook Park Avenue in Cleveland, gone. The Ford,
the Chevy, all of them gone. So the only chance you got is to invest in yourself, get skin in the game, and take on debt and get a degree. And when everyone's doing it, it cheapens the value. And I think that's where we are. And we de-emphasized people building stuff, which is where I'm at now, where I'm glad that the president is saying, look, we need to get people back in the trades who can build stuff and use their hands again and reward work. That's my point.
No, I get it. I totally get it. And it's ironic because now I'm listening to you. I'm thinking, well, maybe I agree more than what I thought. But I'm 57, right? So I heard the same thing growing up in Philadelphia. You know, got to go to college. Yep. And, the data played itself out. You know, you go to college, you get a better chance of getting the higher income and all that, yada, yada, yada. But also what I believe.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic ABC Media app. News.